When he found this out, he was sentenced to death. He took that as Krishna's mercy. For many reasons, he said that this punishment was because he was too attached to family life, to his position as king. And Krishna so kindly had done this to break this attachment, to awaken detachment in his heart out of fear of death. Because everyone ultimately is terrified of death. Everyone in the material world who has any identification with the body is terrified of death. And Prakrit Maharaj was saying that I have knowledge. I have knowledge even though I'm attached, but I have knowledge of Krishna, so therefore this curse is going to be a great benediction for me, because it breaks my detachment and forces me to take full shelter of Krishna, because I have nothing else. Because at the time of death, factually speaking, we do have nothing else but Krishna. Everything else that we think we have, everything else that we think is ours, becomes taken from us. So all we have is Krishna, if we have Krishna. And actually every living entity does have Krishna. But now we have turned our back. We have embraced the prostitute of Maya. And therefore all our spiritual knowledge, bliss, and existence has been stolen away from us. So in great fear at the time of death, if one calls out to Krishna, 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 save me, I have no one but you, then Krishna certainly will protect the person and save such a person. So Maharaj Prakrit was thinking that he was in that category. But actually he was not at all in that category. He was a great devotee. And right from the beginning of his birth, even prior to his birth, he was always thinking and looking for Krishna, examining everyone he saw. Is this that personality who has saved me while I was in the womb? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? This is actually the perfection of Krishna consciousness. Because that perfection of Krishna consciousness, always looking for Krishna, will cause Krishna to reciprocate with that desire of ours by manifesting himself before us. But unfortunately, our desire to look for Krishna, to be with Krishna, is very small, and we're like children. Like a child, they want to do something. And they're very intently doing it. And all you do is you hold up a candy or something and say, hey, look at this over here, or look at this. And immediately they forgot completely what they're doing, and their full attention becomes fixed on whatever they heard or whatever they want. So we are like that, at least a little. But Maharaj Prakrit was a great soul, coming in a great dynasty of the Pandavas, great devotees. His mother even had seen Krishna personally. She was the last person living on the planet who had actually personally seen Krishna. So great personality, Maharaj Prakrit. So when he heard of his impending death, being cursed by the Brahmin boy, he gave up everything. He installed his son Janmanjaya on the throne. And he sat down on the bank of the Jamuna, or the Ganga, deciding to fast until death. Great sages heard about what had happened to Maharaj Prickett, and from all over the universe they came to see, to actually they came to have the association of this personality. So when the sages came, Maharaj Prickett greeted them very politely and appropriately. He glorified them, saying they had come just out of their affection for his forefathers. And he sat down and he asked them, we'll hear what he asked them very soon. But when he, after greeting the sages, in text 20, the sages said to him, "O chief of all the saintly kings of the Pandu dynasty, who are strictly in the line of Lord Krishna, is it not at all astonishing that you give up your throne, which is decorated with the helmets of many kings, to achieve eternal association with the personality of Godhead?" And in the next verse, we'll read some of the purports of this, these two verses, but this, the words of the sages are very nice. "We shall all wait here until the foremost devotee of the Lord, Maharaj Prickett, returns to the supreme planet, which is completely free from all mundane contamination and all kinds of lamentation." So the sages glorified Maharaj Prickett for his determination to give up everything, give up the throne, because generally people want to hold on to what they have. Prabhupada told us the story that I think he personally witnessed of one man. He was going to die, and he was begging the doctor, "Please extend my life. I beg you to please extend my life for just another year and a half, because I haven't fulfilled all my plans yet. I have so many plans that are so important," forgetting that when he does die, whether it's now or a year and a half from now, that he won't benefit from any of his plans. He may become a dog or a monkey or a rat or a mosquito or a mouse. And then what good will the fruit of those plans be to him? So in this way, everyone is so attached to what they think is important. So the sages recognized the greatness of Maharaj Prickett, that he had no attachment. Detached from the throne, detached from the position, detached from the power. Not eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Try to squeeze in as much enjoyment in the last 7 days as possible. No. Detached. So they glorified that. Because he was bound for Golok Vrindavan. And then they said that they would wait here, wait there with him until he had left his body. They wouldn't just come make an appearance. Hare Krishna. Hello. Let's go now. I have something else to do. No, they wanted to wait until the very end to be there with him. Here's what Prabhupada says about these two points in the purport. Two purports, I'll read a bit from each. "The Lord has assured us in the Bhagavad Gita many times that going back to Godhead, his eternal abode, is the highest achievement." So it is for something positive, actually, that one renounces. Prahlad Maharaj, while praying to Lord Nrisimha, said, "O my Lord, I am very much afraid of the materialistic way of life, and I am not the least afraid of your present ghastly, ferocious feature as Nrisimhadev. This materialistic way of life is something like a grinding stone, and we are being crushed by it. We have fallen into this horrible whirlpool of the tossing waves of life. And thus, my Lord, I pray at your lotus feet to call me back to your eternal abode as one of your servitors. This is the summit liberation of this materialistic way of life. I have very bitter experience of the materialistic way of life. So those bitter experiences, those are hateful to materialistic people. But actually those bitter experiences, the crushing, they are Krishna's mercy. Because if it wasn't for that, we would try to stay here as long as possible, trying to cling to whatever we have. But it is the bitterness that actually turns into the sweetness. This is the peculiar thing. It is the most wonderful thing. So Prahlad, Maharaj is saying that after being crushed, he has bitter experience of the materialistic way of life. And if someone doesn't know this yet, that the material life is bitter, if someone is romantically imagining and dreaming that only if I make this little adjustment, then all we request such people is, we have two requests. First is, you can read the newspaper if you don't understand yet the nature of the world, of the very nature of the material world. Of course, our first request is to read the Bhagavatam. But if that fails, read the newspaper. And then if that doesn't wake you up, then we shake your hand and say, okay, find out. Because it's not that anyone can succeed, no matter what type of, no matter if they wear sunglasses and spruce themselves up in fancy clothes and paste a smile to their faces, no one can succeed in the material world. It is a crushing system. In whatever species of life, Prahlad Maharaj says, I have taken birth, compelled by the force of my own activities, I have very painfully experienced two things. Namely, separation from my beloved and meeting with what is not wanted. So in other words, what you don't want to happen happens, and what you do want to happen doesn't happen. And you never know which one is going to come when. And to counteract them, the remedies which I undertook were more dangerous than the disease itself. So I drift from one point to another, birth after birth. And thus I pray to you, therefore, to give me shelter at your lotus feet. So to move faster, Krishna pushes us through bitterness in the material world, and we should see all bitterness is that and that only. And he attracts us with the sweetness of his pastimes and the activities of his devotees in his holy name. So both are there. So that's what Prahlad Maharaj is saying. And it's in conjunction with Maharaj Prickett giving up the throne for something better, actually, because he already knew what the material world was like. And then in the second verse, in which the sages say they're going to stay with him until the end, Prabhupada writes, Maharaj Prickett was destined to achieve the abode of Lord Sri Krishna, this particular abode. And the great rishis assembled there could foresee this. All of them consulted amongst themselves about the great departure of the great king, and they wanted to see him up to the last moment, because they would no more be able to see such a great devotee of the Lord. When a great devotee of the Lord passes away, There is nothing to be lamented because the devotee is destined to enter into the kingdom of God. But the sorry plight is that such great devotees leave our sight. And therefore there is every reason to be sorry, as the Lord is rarely to be seen by our present eyes, so also are the great devotees. The great rishis, therefore, correctly decided to remain on the spot till the last moment. So, that which was spoken by the great sages was very sweet to hear. This is maybe we can say, one of the special characteristics of the way cultured people speak. It is very sweet and true, too. So Maharaj Prickett then congratulated the sages and then spoke to them again. O great sages, you have all very kindly assembled here, having come from all parts of the universe. You are all as good as the Supreme Knowledge personified, who resides in the planet above the three worlds, Satyaloka. Consequently, you are naturally inclined to do good for others. And, but for this, you have no interest, either in this life or the next. In other words, the great sages, this is what it means to be a sage, a holy person, a sadhu. It means that you have no interest in the material world to gain anything. There's nothing for you to be gained or lost within the material world. So then, why does one act at all? Because, generally speaking, people only act when there's something to gain. Or, people act when there's nothing, when they're protecting their gains so they don't lose anything. So why to say this act? And Prabhupada, and the verse even says they are from Satyaloka, they are from the highest planet, the highest realms. So Prabhupada says very clearly, why do they come to the mundane world? They descend on different planets as messiahs by the order of the Lord to deliver the fallen souls. On the earth they come down and do good to the people of the world in different circumstances, under different climatic influences. They have nothing to do in this world, save and except reclaim the fallen souls rotting in material existence, deluded by the material energy. Rotting in material existence. This is actually the fact, although we like to see that we are flourishing in material existence, but actually if we don't bathe for a few days, we become intolerable to be near even, because the body rots. It rots, and slow process maybe, but it rots. It shrivels up. Falls apart. So it's a rotting situation, and deluded by the material energy, people think, oh, this is wonderful, but they're rotting. This is the potency of Maya. We think if we put some, and there's nothing actually more grotesque as an old person with the makeup on, with the, you know, dressing as if they were young. It's very grotesque, and people glorify it. But it's actually horrible, and it's the power of the illusory energy. Ooh. Rather, one should be bold and face reality that, yes, I'm dying. So therefore, I should deal with it and find out what is the purpose of my life. So after thanking the sages and appreciating that they were there only to do good for others, namely, and the others in this case happened to be him, is what Maharaj Prickett said. Now he gets to the point. O trustworthy brahmanas, I now ask you about my immediate duty. 7 days to live. Now, how to spend those days? What is my duty? Please, after proper deliberation, tell me of the unalloyed, the pure, uncontaminated duty of everyone in all circumstances, and specifically, what is the duty of those who are about to die? Now, actually, what is the duty of those about to die? Maharaj Prickett knew the answer to that because, as said, he wanted to focus his mind fully on Krishna and engage fully in devotional service. But, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, although he knew the answer, there are different methods, and he wanted the opinion of the sages to confirm it so he could go on with his duty, which he knew the answer to, again, what it was, without any controversy. Because people have different opinions of what you should do. Always, if there's two or three people, there will be two or three different opinions. And verily, Sridhar Swami says that when Maharaj Prickett asked, what is my duty? What is the duty of someone about to die? Immediately, Sridhar Swami says, the sages began to quarrel with one another, as some recommended sacrifices, others meditation, others austerity, others recommended charity. So what is the answer, actually? What should one do? Because after all, who is not about to die? Who is not dying? So what is the duty of one? And just as the sages were arguing about it, quarreling in a gentle way, we can be sure, at that moment, by Krishna's divine arrangement, appeared the powerful son of Vyasadeva himself, who traveled all over the earth, disinterested, satisfied within himself. He was Atmaram. His name was Sukadev Goswami, and he appeared there just at that time. He did not manifest any symptoms of belonging to any social order or status of life. He was surrounded with women and children, and he dressed as if others had neglected him. He was naked. His hair was strewn. People were following him, teasing him, making fun of him. And he was completely detached, focused. His consciousness was focused on Krishna. The son of Vyas was only 16 years old. Dviasta means 2 times 8. His legs, hands, thighs, arms, shoulders, forehead, and the other parts of his body were all delicately formed. His eyes were beautifully wide, and his nose and ears were highly raised. He had a very attractive face, and his neck was well formed and beautiful like a conch shell. So these verses, these next several verses, describe his beauty. His collarbone was fleshy. These are all auspicious marks. His chest, broad and thick. His navel deep and his abdomen beautifully striped. His arms were long and his curly hair was strewn over his beautiful face. He was naked and the hue of his body reflected that of Lord Krishna. He was blackish and very beautiful due to his youth. Because of the glamour of his body and his attractive smiles, he was pleasing to women. Though he tried to cover his natural glories, the great sages present there were all expert in the art of physiognomy, and so they honored him by rising from their seats. They immediately, even though he was being teased and followed by children, when he appeared there, the sages recognized this is not an ordinary person. This is Sukadev Goswami, the famous exalted son of Srila Vyasadeva, the self-realized soul. And they all stood up. They stopped their quarreling and they stood up out of respect for him. And Vishnu Ratta, Maharaj Prickett, he bowed to receive the chief guest, Sukadev Goswami. So when all the, when the children and the ladies following him saw that he, that this person that they were teasing and making fun of, was given so much respect, they immediately became frightened and left. And they offered Sukadev, the sages, knowing his position as the highest of the sages, the highest of the self-realized soul, they immediately offered him the most exalted seat of honor. There is an old Confucian saying that when there are seats of honor in a place, because when there's a gathering of people, there are certain seats that are reserved for the more respected person. So the Confucian saying is that you never take an exalted seat, an honored seat. Why? Because if you take an exalted seat and someone more exalted than you comes along, they will have to tell you to move. So better, Confucius says, that they have to invite you to sit there than invite you off the seat. So immediately, as soon as Sukadev Goswami appeared, everyone recognized who the most exalted person was, and they gave him that seat. So, in the presence of all the sages, he was like the moon. He appeared like the moon surrounded by stars. So this is showing how much more light is given by the moon, the example, than stars. And secondly, it means how gorgeous such a scene is, the moon surrounded by stars. Because he was a devotee. And they were, some of them were recommended, some of them were jnanis, some of them were karma experts at karma kandis, and he was an exalted devotee, and the exalted devotee is given the most respect. So he sat down, 16 years old, in the presence of all these senior and elderly sages. He was perfectly pacified, intelligent, ready to answer any question without hesitation. So Maharaj Prickett saw him sitting there so effulgently and wonderfully. He approached him. He offered his respects. And he politely began to ask. With folded hands, he began to ask the question, what should I do? The same question he had asked the sages, the other sages that started them quarreling. But first he offered some glorification. And here, the words in the 32nd verse, Parikshita Vacha, he's so fortunate. And here's why. Because one would think that he's the most unfortunate person. He would make the headlines of the community newspapers, that how unfortunate this person who had everything was to lose it, and everyone would weep. But he's the most fortunate person actually, because he's going to give up the temporary for the eternal, and not only the eternal, but the highest position of the eternal. His relationship with Krishna is awakening. So this is what he asked. Well, first, this is how he glorified Sukadev first. O Brahmana, by your mercy only, you have sanctified us, making us into like unto a place of pilgrimage, all by your presence here as my guest. By your mercy, we, who are but unworthy royalty, become eligible to serve the devotee. So, Maharaj Prickett is saying, because you have come, this place is now a holy place of pilgrimage. Spoken very sweetly, aho, adhyavayam brahman. Aho means oh. Oh, how wonderful it is that you have come out of your own sweet will. There's a wonderful verse that we may remember from the 13th chapter when Vidura enters Hastinapur. Yudhisthira Maharaj says, Bhavadvidas Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhuta Sayam Vibhu Tirtha Korvanti Tirthani Svantastena Gadabritaha. Gada means club, the mace. And Brita means the one who holds it. Svanta, Svaanta, within you is situated the Lord. And therefore, you are a place of pilgrimage, because a place of pilgrimage is holy because the Lord is there in some form or another. So because the Lord is situated especially within the hearts of the devotees, exalted personalities, sages, they turn any place they are in into a place of pilgrimage. And he says, even though we are rejected unworthy royalty that sages and devotees stay away from, because you have come here, we have become eligible to serve the devotee. By your mercy, now I can render some service. And how powerful. So this is, these verses wake us up to what we are hearing, the fortune of what we are hearing. So Maharaj Prickett, the king, was thinking this fortune that he has the ability now to hear from Sukadeva Goswami. So we, by the mercy of Prabhupada, have the ability to hear Sukadeva Goswami's words too. How powerful is such a sage? Simply by remembering you, our houses become instantly sanctified. And what to speak of seeing you? So if remembering you is so powerful, how fortunate I am that I can see you. I can touch you and wash your holy feet and offering you a seat in our home. Just as the atheist cannot remain in the presence of the personality of Godhead, so also the invulnerable sins of a man, invulnerable means they cannot be removed. The sins of a man, a person, which cannot be removed, are immediately vanquished in your presence, O saint, O great mystic. Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is very dear to the sons of King Pandu, has accepted me as one of those relatives just to please his great cousins and brothers. So, Prabhupada has a purport here, it's very nice, that because Krishna accepted the Pandavas practically like a relative, therefore out of Krishna's mercy, he has sent Sukadeva Goswami here to take care of. And Prabhupada explains in the purport. See, in other words, he's saying, I'm not worthy. This is the mark of a great person. Not only saying it, but he's feeling himself so humbly. I'm not worthy. But it is due to somehow or another, I am a relative of the Pandavas, who are great devotees of Krishna. Therefore, because of that, despite my unworthiness, Krishna has sent you here. And Prabhupada explains that in his purport that people naturally want to take care of their family members. But just by becoming a devotee, then Krishna becomes inclined to the family members. And he can take better care of them then you can take care of them even. So the point being that if one wants to do the best thing for his family members, has affection for them, increase one's own devotional service, and Krishna will care better than we can for our beloved family members. I'll read what Prabhupada says because it's sweet. A pure and exclusive devotee of the Lord serves his family interests more dexterously than others who are attached to illusory family affairs. Generally, people are attached to family matters, and the whole economic impetus of human society is moving under the influence of family affection. Such deluded persons have no information that one can render better service to the family by becoming a devotee of the Lord. The Lord gives special protection to the family members and descendants of a devotee, even though such members are themselves non-devotees. And Prabhupada puts an exclamation point there. How amazing it is that Krishna will take care of those. It's natural, though. If someone is dear to you, then you take care of the people who are dear to them. And the example is Prahlad Maharaj was a great devotee of the Lord, but his father Hiranyakashipu was a great atheist and a declared enemy of the Lord. But despite all this, Hiranyakashipu was awarded salvation due to his being the father of Maharaj Prahlad. The Lord is so kind that he gives all protection to the family members of his devotee, and thus the devotee has no need to bother about his family members, even if one leaves such family members aside to discharge devotional service. Maharaj Yudhisthira and his brothers were the sons of Kunti, the paternal aunt of Lord Krishna, and Maharaj Prickett admits the patronage of Lord Krishna because of his being the only grandson of the great Pandavas. So how did Krishna express his affection for Prickett Maharaj? He saved him before by protecting his body while still in the womb, and now he's saving him really from the curse of the Brahmanas by giving him eternal life. And how? Through the association of Sukadeva Goswami. Otherwise, Maharaj Prickett continues, without being inspired by Lord Krishna, how is it that you have voluntarily appeared here? Though you are moving incognito to the common man, no one knows who you are, you have no reason to go anywhere, but all of a sudden, just when I need you, you have appeared. This means Krishna's mercy. Otherwise, you who are incognito and not visible to us who are on the verge of death. As soon, Prabhupada explains in the purport, the Lord is seated in the heart of all living beings, and thus he knows very well the movements of all individual persons. As soon as the Lord finds that a particular soul is very eager to go back to Godhead, the Lord at once sends his bona fide representative. The sincere devotee is thus assured by the Lord of going back to Godhead. The conclusion is that to get the assistance and help of a bona fide spiritual master means to receive the direct help of the Lord himself. So he continues speaking to Sukadeva. You are the spiritual master of great saints and devotees. I am therefore begging you to show the way of perfection for all persons, and especially for one about to die. Please let me know what a man should hear, chant, remember, and worship, and also what he should not do. Please explain all this to me. O powerful Brahmana, it is said that you hardly stay in the houses of men long enough to milk a cow, because the sages, they were so detached, they would only go to a householder's house. They would come early in the morning just after the householder had milked the cow, and they would beg a pound of milk, that's a half a liter, maybe, of milk, enough to sustain them for the whole day. And during that time, there'd be a few minutes, just a few minutes, because they were so detached, before they would wander off again, where the householder had the chance to ask a question, spiritual question. So Sukadev Siddhar Swami says that that this verse states that the sight of Sukadev Goswami is rarely achieved. What to speak of the opportunity to question him and hear from him? So Maharaj Prickett was feeling his great fortune. The king thus spoke and questioned the sage using sweet language. Then the great and powerful personality, the son of Vyasadeva, who knew the principles of religion, began his reply. Remember, he's asking him, what should I do now? What should I do? I'm about to die. So we're going to, that ends the first canto, the 19th chapter of the first canto, which is the final chapter. And next week we'll begin the second canto. And hear the reply from Sukadev. Now I'd just like to the essence of this chapter really teaches us that death is coming, and we may not be so fortunate as Maharaj Prickett to know when it is coming. So what is the duty of our life? So the answer to that question is, what should one do with his life? The answer to the question, we'll hear in the next canto, and the rest of the Bhagavatam really is the answer to that question. But this chapter really emphasizes the importance of the association of holy personages such as Sukadev Goswami and how powerful they are. Especially one verse, when Prickett Maharaj explained, just as the atheist in text 34, sanidhyate mahadyogin patakani mahatyapi sadyo nashyantivai pumsam vishno iva suretara. Just as the atheist cannot remain in the presence of the personality of Godhead, so also the invulnerable sins of a man are immediately vanquished in your presence, O saint, O great mystic. So I thought that we would honor this verse by singing a bhajan by Narottama Thakur from his Partana, called Ebaro Karuna Koro Vaishnava Gosai. I'll read it first. Maybe we could pass out the songbooks to this, and we'll read the Bangla and the English, and then Vasudhigra Prabhu has agreed to Gaya. Evaro Karuna Koro Vaishnava Gosai. Evaro, just please, Karuna Koro, give me your mercy, O Vaishnava Goswami, O Vaishnava, O Sadhu, O great saint. Patita Pavana Toma Bina Keho Nai. There is no one except you who can purify the fallen souls. Jahara nikate gele papa dure jai emona dayalu prabhu kebo kota pai. Where does anyone find such a merciful personality by whose mere audience all sins go far away? Gangara paraso haile pastate pavan darshane pavitra koro etomara gun. After bathing in the waters of the sacred Ganges many times, one becomes purified. But just by the sight of you, the fallen souls are purified. That is your great power. Haristane aparadi tare harinam. Tomas tane aparadi nahi parita. The holy name delivers one who has committed an offense to Lord Hari. But if one commits an offense to you, there is no means of deliverance. Tomara vidhaye sada govinda visram govinda kahena mora vaishnava paran. Your heart is always the resting place of Lord Govinda. And Lord Govinda says, the Vaishnavas are in my heart. Pati janme kori ash saraneira duli narottama korodaya apanara bole. I desire the dust of your holy feet in every birth I may take. Pati janme kori ash. And many, birth after birth, many births, my hope is what? Charana dule. The dust of your lotus feet. Narottama das. Koro doya apanara vole. Please consider Narottama yours and be kind upon him. Prabhu? No. Okay. Who will sing it then? Madanga, what's the proper way to say it? Madanga, bajo. What's the right word to say?
Imarakoo.